Next case is 98-398, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Paul Kamarik.
Let's take the kid out for you.
Kamarik.
Hey, please, Ford. I'm sorry for my misconduct and the harm that I caused my client. But I'm an attorney recovering from mental illness and deserve substantial suspension and has admitted misconduct from the beginning and has arranged an effective monitoring plan to go into effect after his return to practice. There is every reason for this court to return the attorney to practice and no reason to oppose discipline again. Let me call attention to some matters which are set out in the record. First off, I have always acknowledged my misconduct. This case, the disciplinary side of my case, was tried based on stipulation based on the original pleadings in this case. I have served a suspension totaling 3 years to date. I'm the first person that, as far as I can tell, has ever applied to return to practice before the court after having received a mental illness suspension. My condition was misdiagnosed for years. The medication that I took aggravated my condition and, in fact, drove my condition into a period of mania and hypomania. All of the doctors who testified in the case recognized that there was a link between my medical condition and the misconduct in my case. And everyone finds that I have made a significant recovery and that my condition has now been in remission for some 2 years. It's also clear to find that I've paid a great deal of attention to steps to minimize the danger to the public in the future. From the very time when I filed my application to come back to practice, I was in touch with the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program. I was the first person with a mental illness ever to contact the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program for assistance. And I have submitted to the court a plan for rehabilitation and monitoring to come into effect should the court restore me to practice. My doctor's recommendations regarding steps I should take with respect to my return to practice are also set out in the record. With respect to matters of law, I agree with two major points that are cited by the court. First off, I agree that mental illness is not a defense to a disciplinary action, but should be considered a mitigation. I also agree that the Americans with Disabilities Act does not give immunity to mentally ill people. But the fact that the court has already suspended me pursuant to Rule 5, Section 7 changes everything. Because a mental illness suspension is a form of discipline. Rule 4, Section 1, designates Rule 5 as a whole as the means for enforcing the Code of Professional Responsibility. Rule 5 is headed disciplinary procedure. Section 7 of Rule 5 is as much a part of Rule 5 as is any other section. When you look at Section 7 and the wording of that section, you can see that Section 7 is a summary remedy, but not an interim remedy. First off, Section 7 does not say it is an interim remedy. If you compare that to Rule 5, Section 5, interim suspension in cases of a conviction for a felony or failure to pay child support, there is explicit wording there that the remedy is an interim one.
The purpose. So would you agree that the purpose is the same in the interim suspension for removing someone from the practice because, particularly in the felony situation, because if they've been convicted of a felony or pled to a felony, that we need to remove them to protect the public with respect to psychiatric condition, albeit obviously the cause is very different. But isn't the rationale of the rule the same that if someone engages in conduct, type of conduct that you did, and let's assume it was all caused by the mental condition, isn't the purpose of the rule the same, to remove that person from the practice so that they don't harm persons who use lawyers?
I say that it's important to remove people who are not, who are mentally ill. And I would agree with you there, and it's important for the protection of the public to remove from practice people who are mentally ill and to remove them in an expeditious fashion. That's why I said it was a summary remedy. In fact, even these removals for a criminal charge were not originally written as interim remedies, but as summary remedies. When they first appeared in the rules for practice, also, with respect to mental illness, when these rules first appeared in 1964, you can't predict how long a person is going to remain mentally ill, and you can't predict that there will ever be a certain time when the person will be able to come back.
In fact, in 1964, it's likely that the attitude would have been that person may never come back, and as we know now, of course, with treatment and drugs, persons can function, as you well know.
That's right. So, as I can see it, it's much more likely that rule was conceived as a way of summarily removing a person from the practice of law on account of the person's mental condition. It's also something that could be pled by either side, and although you can see the ordinary complaint, you would probably imagine that the ordinary complaint would be one where the bar association said, you know, this person's not functioning. To be fair, the court's rule does allow a defendant to raise the issue. And in cases where the court has had the issue raised before it, the court has always decided whether or not to impose a mental illness suspension on the one hand or Section 6 action on the other. There's a case I cited called Mahoning Bar Association versus Creed, in which the person apparently it was set up so that this person could have been treated as a mental illness suspension, but the court decided that because of the misconduct, they would impose a regular Section 6 suspension for a definite period instead. So there's a choice, and the court acknowledged at that point that there was a choice. And if they can make a choice of one over the other, then in my case, I can say that the court chose in favor of the mental illness suspension in my case, as opposed to the Section 6 action in my case. After all, and I did cite an annotation in the American Law Reports. Often a person's mental illness is expressed through the conduct that they had, and so leading to, and so it should not be surprising that from time to time a person will plead mental illness, and in this case, evaluated under that circumstance, and then. Come in for a mental illness suspension. I don't see much danger of abuse because the court will first off decide whether or not to impose a mental illness suspension or a Section 6 action, and the court decides pursuant to Section 7 whether or not it's been established that the reason for the suspension has been later states that's a discretionary action on the part of the court. And the court also has plenary power to impose conditions of probation and observation of the attorney afterwards. And so if I'm stated to be asking for the creation of an exception to long-standing rulings that people cannot come in and claim that they felt that and obtain absolution, first off, I'm not doing that. I'm relying on a rule that has been if the purpose of Section 7 was to serve Section 6, there should be some action to try and bring those cases back into regular disciplinary process. And that's another thing that could be done, but that's not done. There's also public policy reasons for interpreting this as an interim remedy. First off, these suspensions should be interpreted as a way to shorten disciplinary proceedings and not go into matters of fact that are essentially admitted. Secondly, it should be interpreted in a way that encourages impaired lawyers to seek out help. And thirdly, it should be interpreted in a way that is consistent with the ethical consideration that ethical consideration 1-6, which says that when a person's mental or emotional problems are detected, lawyers should facilitate their removal from practice, and when they have recovered, the lawyer should facilitate their return to practice. And I think that considering Section 7 suspension in that way does both. The relator says that attorneys with mental illnesses do not meet the minimum qualifications for the practice of law. Well, the same is often said of attorneys who commit misconduct, and I think that in that way, both provisions serve the same purpose. Both disciplinary provisions serve the purpose of removing folks who generally aren't qualified.
Your argument would require, because your argument really is sort of a matter of law, I think, are you not? That the court would always, when mental illness is the issue, that the court in that hearing would decide whether the conduct arose from the mental illness, whether it was aggravated by it, or whether it was totally independent of the mental illness, but not. In this case, we haven't done that, have we?
Your Honor, in every case that a person has submitted a court finding of comments, there's a process where you get sent to the doctor for an evaluation, and the evaluation comes back. And I would imagine it proper for the Bar Association at that point, if it felt the conduct did not result from a person's mental illness, to raise that issue at that time. It seems highly appropriate to do that. And in fact, one of the arguments that I cited in my brief was that the Bar Association did not do that. And this Cregan case, we talked about the choice that is made between one section and another, had been on the post then for some time. The relator also points out a criminal law analog, where they talk about a person being confined until they're able to stand trial, and then the case reestablishing itself to be heard. Well, those procedures are explicitly set out in statutes and court rules, but what the relator proposes is not.
I understand your legal argument, and I waited until you just had 2 minutes to go because I'd like to really get to the merits of it. I understand your legal argument about the various rules and the mental suspension or the mental disability suspension, mental illness suspension versus a regular discipline, but there are some specific counts here, and I'd like to go through them with you and just have short answers with short questions if we could. Count one, has it been resolved?
Count one with Mr. Hill?
No, six is Mr. Hill, I think. This is the one where Judge Wilkie...
Oh, Judge Wilkie appointed a...
Yeah, I understand everything that he did.
Is been resolved.
That whole estate has been taken care of and the guardianship's been handled?
Right.
They're not clients hanging out waiting for us to do something with regard to those matters in complaint, to count one. Count two was the younger case, where you file a lawsuit or supposedly in the amount of $5,000. Where are we with regard to the $65,000 counterclaim? Has that case have been resolved?
Your Honor, the others have separate counsel. I have no idea. I do believe that they settled, and I believe that they settled for approximately what I had not been.
Well, their lawsuit was dismissed, and there was a default judgment against them. Do you know, has that all been resolved?
The others have...
Separate counsel.
Separate counsel.
They needed that after... Okay.
And they have settled.
All right. Count three involves Mr. Hill in a number of areas, A, B, C, and D. Is the Hill matter resolved in any way? Okay, and that judgment is?
The approximate amount of
$167,000, okay. And that resolves, to your satisfaction, the Hill matter, at least definitively. We know that judgment, have you tried to set that judgment aside for any reason?
I did file a motion to set it aside on account of the medical issue.
That was not successful. Okay. Account four involves, Ms. Love, what happened to her discrimination lawsuit? Did she end up being harmed? Has she been resolved?
The case was dismissed, and Ms. Love was not available for the hearing. Her case was dismissed, and I don't know what the court said.
And your mental illness problem resulted in your check being returned for insufficient funds for the filing fees? Okay. Count five was dismissed, and count six is the one I'm finally going to get to. Are you registered today to practice before this court?
Your Honor, I understand that I do not need to register because I'm in an inactive status, and so I do not need to register.
Well, inactive status is a registration.
Right, so
have you registered as inactive?
Yes, pursuant to this court's order.
Not pursuant to the court's order. Did you file a document saying you were inactive because of the suspension?
I inquired the clerk's office asking
if I needed to file it. Okay. Has the Joseph matter in count seven been resolved? That's really a very important one, I think.
Yes.
Okay. The rest, I think, I understand. The immigration, well, we had that in another case, as I remember. The count nine. Since we had that in another case, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kamerick. Mr. Lawson.
She's still on there.
May it please the court. Respondent seeks to use the mental illness provision in section 7 to avoid a suspension. In disciplinary counsel versus tribunal, this court held that the mental illness provisions are not intended to be used by a respondent in a disciplinary action to avoid suspension on that basis. I'd like to comment on the respondent's brief in which he talks about being double checked. Section 7 is not a criminal matter. There's no trial, there's no hearing, merely by in his answer suggesting that he may be mentally ill. The process then was to send him for the board to appoint a psychiatrist. He was examined in the psychiatrist's virus report. He had no opportunity to question the psychiatrist, and upon the report, the panel recommended that he be suspended under Section 7. There was no hearing. If no hearing, if no jeopardy, there can be no double jeopardy. Nor can it be raised to Chicago. We were not permitted to bring up anything in that portion because there was no hearing. I'd like to talk about the questions involving the American Disability Act. As far as I know, first time it's been raised in this court. The ADA prevents the same discipline for a handicapped person as it does for a non-handicapped person. Respondent has cited to the EEOC guidelines. We've included a complete copy of the EEOC guidelines as an appendix to our brief. in the guidelines, which are titled Psychiatric Disabilities of the ADA. It holds that an employer may discipline an individual even if misconduct was caused by the disability. It does not prevent an employer from maintaining workplace freedom from violence. The ADA does not prevent an employer from disciplining an employee who steals, even though the employee has a disability. The key is that an employer may discipline an employee who has a disability if he would impose the same discipline on an employee who is not disabled. That's basically what discrimination law is all about. It's a treating someone different. And in this case, as long as you're treating people the same, the ADA really is not going to be a problem. Now, the ADA also does provide for reasonable accommodations. But it should be noted that, and it's also in the guidelines, that an accommodation is always prospective. Again, they say an employer is not required to excuse past conduct or past misconduct. An attorney steals from a client, he can be disciplined the same as a non-handicapped. In this case, we do have serious misconduct. We have two individuals who lost their property. One lost his home, was evicted, and the house was stolen. Another one, there was a foreclosure. An individual who was not actually harmed, but probably had the most potential harm, was the case involving immigration. Fortunately, he was not picked up. He had a traffic ticket or anything in front of the police. He could have been picked up, and according to Mr. Weigel, his immigration attorney, Mr. Weigel testified that because of the way it was handled, he could have been immediately deported without a hearing, without any chance of getting back. And Mr. Weigel testified that he was familiar with conditions in Sri Lanka, and that if his client had been returned, that he would have been in grave danger. We have several cases where the respondent has misappropriated the client's funds and spent them for such things as Mike's offer. The appropriate sanction for this court is consistently when an attorney steals from a client, the proper punishment is disbarment. In this particular case, the panel, the board, recommended that there be a indefinite suspension because this court has also recognized that mitigation, that mental illness and alcoholism can be considered in mitigation. The mitigation in this case is from a disbarment to indefinite suspension with no credit time served. I would just like one last thing I'd like to comment on, and that is one of the things that we requested is that the respondent be required to have malpractice insurance. He has an outstanding judgment right now of $155,000, which is not paid. He still, his client, the Youngers, wound up settling their case for $22,500. They didn't sue him because they knew he had no malpractice and had no money. But because he has clients who have severely suffered, as we pointed out in our brief, a 10-year study on bipolar candidates, bipolar patients, about 77% during a 10-year period had to be hospitalized, and about 89% suffered reoccurrence of bipolar. Mr. Merrick has been in sole practice. He practiced with these conditions for 5 years and did irreparable harm to many of his clients. We're concerned that at least if he's allowed to come back, that there be some protection for his future clients, because what we're here about is to protect the public. Yet, at the very minimum, if he's not required to carry malpractice insurance, he should at least be required to inform every client in writing that he does not carry malpractice insurance. While I'm here, I'd like to recommend that this Supreme Court consider at some point I think if you, based on what we saw at the hearing, we don't question at that time that he was malicorporeal. I did observe him when we took his deposition, and at the time he was staying in ADD, I suspected that it might be major depression, but I didn't have anything to go on other than that. His appearance here is totally different from that that it was earlier. So no, I have no objection to a previous state, but then once you're in a state of imperfect free to suspend him indefinitely is recommended by the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman. Mr. Merrick, you've used your time, so you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. I do want to say that Henry Ruffalo, as I quoted, deals with the issue of procedural due process. If these rules state what I say they say, then I'm entitled to the benefit of Section 7, suspension being treated as a final decision of my case, and as an element of this process. I also say that the Bar Association has not provided a reasonable argument for saying otherwise. And I say again that I have taken the steps to identify ways to practice in the future which will not harm my clients, and that I can return to the
Thank you, Mr. Merrick. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.